everybody. This is the Happy Market Research Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Jamin Brazil, joined with Alexandra Lauber.
Hey, everyone. I'm so excited to be recording our first episode today, mostly because I get to actually interview Jamin, and that will allow all of us to get to know him a little bit better.
Yeah, it's a little bit terrifying, but let's get started.
All right. So tell us a little bit about your background, Jamin.
I grew up in the Central Valley of California, a small grapes to raisin farm, 40 acres. My parents didn't have much money, but they scrimped and saved for that farm back in the late 70s. And so my sister and I were raised on it. It was a great way to grow up. We learned a lot about hard work. I was fluent in Spanish. In fact, I spoke exclusively Spanish to kindergarten because all of my friends were families of immigrants. So it was a really good way of growing up.
Awesome. So one of my favorite stories that you have about growing up on the farm is just that visual of those grapes going on ad infinitum as you look down that row.
Probably my most visceral connection with my childhood was, you know, whether it was harvest or pruning or whatever event was happening, irrigating, when we would start a project, it would always start on the end of the vineyard at the first row. It was literally number one, right? And you look down the end of this row and you literally can't see the end, but there would be countless, it felt like billions of vines, obviously not on a 40 acre parcel, but it felt like it, you know, especially as a child. And so I'd start, I'd take whatever tools were needed to get the job done, pruning shears or grape trays or what have you, and just start working on one vine at a time and work all the way down to the end of the row and then stand up, look at what I had done and think, holy crap, I can't believe I just did that. And then I'd look at the other axis, say, oh my gosh, there's a lot more rows to do, and just get right back to it. But the interesting part of that for me is the satisfaction that it gave me of actually doing work. I'm very thankful to my parents for giving me the opportunity to be able to learn how to work and then be able to apply those principles to what I'm doing now and have done so far.
Yeah, I really like that. I feel very similarly when I wake up in the morning and I think to myself, I have good work to do today. I know it's going to be a good day.
Yeah.
So tell me, how did you, you know, make that transition from being a farm boy in Madeira to owning a market research company?
So farming is with great risk. My father invested back in 82, an Apple IIc for the family. We didn't actually know what we would do with a computer, but it felt like something that was important and that he would give us the opportunity to learn from. And so, you know, he and I would attend classes both in Fresno and then also in San Francisco on how to program. And so that programming skill stuck with me through college, where I leveraged it to buy new Macs and then later to start a small website construction company that I then parlayed into e-commerce sites that then in 96 brought me into market research.
Interesting. Very cool. So why did you start Decipher?
Yeah, I like logistics a lot, and market research in a lot of ways is logistics. My favorite thing is data. I'm a data geek by definition. And so being able to gather consumer opinions and then analyze those trends, especially over time, is just very, very interesting to me. It excites me. It keeps me up at night. Like, you know, I'd rather do that than almost anything else, actually. And so, yeah, market research to me is this really neat intersection between technology, getting stuff done, and then also providing value to the marketplace for businesses to make decisions.
You have titled this podcast the Happy Market Research Podcast. So I have a very Oprah question for you. What does happiness mean to you?
So, you know, happiness is in a lot of ways a state of mind, but what market research does is unique in that we are, as Lenny Murphy recently said, the keepers of why in today's marketplace. There's lots of different tools and systems that can gather consumer feedback, but interpreting that data correctly is a lot of science, right? And it isn't just the case that because two is bigger than one, you should by default go with that, you know, the bigger number. Understanding the why and getting into the psychology is the underpinnings of that is what will ultimately determine winning or losing in the market. And I've given a lot of presentations over the last two decades. Every time I do, I love that aha moment that is created when the brand is, you know, interpreting the results, and then all of a sudden you can just say, oh, you can see it in their faces that, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense to me, or holy crap, I can't believe I didn't see that coming. It's a neat, you know, injection point for me. And so Happy Market Research tries to capture the emotion around that aha moment.
Awesome. Yeah, I think I have this theory of knowledge that we understand things on almost three different levels, like a what level, the content, a how level, how did we get there, a logistical level, and then a why level, which is really your deepest level of analysis. And a lot of people can get at that what level and know that, you know, two is in fact bigger than one, but that why is so much more valuable. It allows you to duplicate that information across multiple streams because you understand the underlying principle of why two is bigger than one and why that turned out that way.
Yeah, but sometimes you might think is the wrong question is answered, or asked. So anyway, yeah, I take your point.
So tell me about one of your core beliefs that's essential to your worldview. I've noticed for you that so many of the actions and choices that you make are derivative of who you are as a person. So share that with us.
Business is in a lot of ways, it's just for me, a part of the story, right? It's a way of obviously generating wealth. In truth, my motivator isn't around generating wealth. I want to make sure I make enough money to support my family, but it's much more about the journey and about building something that is meaningful. I just happen to be in market research, which is, you know, where my focus is and contacts are. So that's
and
where
your talent.
And my talent. Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. But in a lot of ways, I think about how do we build a better world? You know, when you look at the ROI on things like investing in human capital, there's countless data points that show as companies, whether it's Zappos or Gary Vaynerchuk's work or whatever it is, these very well-known organizations, as they invest in their people, by default, they improve the overall customer experience as well. And I was recently at ballet where my daughter was performing. She had a minor part, but we watched it. She was a big deal, of course. Everybody's very excited. And so I'm sitting with my 11-year-old afterwards, and we're on this little mini father-daughter date in Sacramento. And we're at this nice dinner, and we look out over the large expanse of lawn and then see the Capitol. Well, as the evening progressed, it obviously turned to nighttime, and then homeless people moved into this little park and set up camp for the evening. So I had just, at this point, I was thinking to myself, all right, you know, we're spending a lot of money at dinner, and you have these people that are out there who don't have a lot of money. They don't have really anything, to my knowledge. And I asked her, I said, are we better off investing in protecting our own family and trying to secure our wealth, or are we better off investing and helping the people that are out there? And she literally stopped, paused, and thought, okay, Dad, I think what we should do is help the people that are out there because it will in turn help secure our future. And I think that view is exactly right, that the more that we invest in fixing the problems that are around us, and I know this is off topic relative to market research, but I think it's an important part of the answer, right? The better world that we make and the more value we inherently add, which then in turn has this karma-like impact on our own lives. And so as we give, a lot of times we think, oh, I'm not going to get back. But in my 47 years, I can tell you every place that I plant, but overwhelmingly the amount that comes back to me exceeds, you know, where my investments have been. So it's all about the people, right? And it's about the communities and supporting people accordingly.
Yeah. So what does market research really do for businesses, and why should businesses pay attention to it?
I mean, market research plays two roles. One is a logistical element, and then the other is the keeper of why, quoting Lenny Murphy. So logistically, you have a question, you just asked me, I answer the question. This is a very easy transaction, right? Once you get 10,000 customers or 100,000 customers or 100 million customers or billions of customers, asking the question is really hard. And then answering the question and is really hard as well, because you have this chorus of voices. In many cases, they can wind up conflicting with each other. So the role of market research is to ensure logistically that the answers or the questions are asked in the right way, and that the answers are gathered in the right way, and that ultimately the insights are interpreted in the right way that has the correct business outcome for the brand. And that's where I'm seeing this major evolution over the last decade. As you know, first in the late 90s, we had the entrant of online surveys, you know, starting to take over telephone interviews and in-person interviews. Clearly, those methodologies still have a role in market research. I'm not saying they're going away, but my point is that online research is certainly dominant now. Mobile platforms, as the iPhone launched, you know, around 2007, 2008, that became very interesting for us. And social, obviously, has been just growing like gangbusters and is a legitimate way to be able to monitor social behaviors. And, you know, and then the plethora of tools that, like WordPress plugins, for example, that allow you to do site intercepts and completely bypass the market research space altogether. So basically what's happened is there's been this democratization of market research through technology empowerment, and market research has not been the ones leading the charge. You know, inherently market research is conservative, right? It's about what's proven. We're scientific. But when you have people, you know, that are just entering their careers and they're not beholden to this sort of law and they're empowered through technology, then we are really losing in, are we adding value on the logistics side of gathering consumer insight? In many cases, the answer is no. In many cases, in fact, existing technologies and new technologies are able to do it faster and better and cheaper than traditional market research. So that's where I keep coming back to getting to this, the why or the added value being really the interpretation. And then also, of course, the study design and all these things are really important. But you know, we as market researchers need to get in command of the ship, which is consumer voice in the market, so that the brands know the direction that they need to head.
Yeah, excellent. So what is one of the biggest opportunities for market research that you think is being just overlooked or flying right by?
Well, I mean, historically, we have not been in the front of things, right? We're always in the hinds. It used to be the case that brands were who they said they were, and now brands are who their customers say they are. Social has just completely, whether it's the Me Too movement or what happened with United Airlines, there's just countless examples of social just completely ripping the curtain down between the bad performers and the general public. So, you know, market research has this massive opportunity, I think, to seize the why and help brands connect at an emotional level. And one of the things I was just talking with a CEO in the industry on is the impact of voice. Do consumer interviews with an Alexa. So just put an Alexa in a focus group room, right? And have consumers or potential consumers order toilet paper. Alexa, order toilet paper. Is that what they're saying? Or are they saying a brand name? What we're finding is that most of the time, they're just ordering on with a generic term. What's interesting is that Amazon is buying up the generic terms. And as they continue to own that space, and there's not an opportunity to intercept the buy, then now Amazon has locked up literally everything from consumer inception need to then ultimate fulfillment. And that's where I think that brands and market researchers really need to be focusing in on the next 3 to 5 years. 20% of searches on mobile devices are now voice, and it doesn't even work well. So imagine as Alexa, which has over 20 million units now inside of North America, is gaining traction. I mean, this is a big problem that I'm not hearing a lot of people talking about.
Yeah, and unless you have such a powerful brand presence like Kleenex, you become synonymous with the item itself.
Exactly.
You're going to be left behind. So yeah. Your brand needs to be that powerful.
So then the real question becomes for the brands, how in the next 2 to 5 years can I secure the emotional connection like a Kleenex to the consumer, right? That is, if we don't answer that question, those brands are literally not going to exist, or they'll exist in a completely different way than they do right now.
Excellent. Very, very interesting. So where are you now and what are you looking to do in the future?
I'm doing a lot of different things, which, you know, the people that are following me are probably sick of. I've got a small venture capital company. We're doing about 6 investments a year, most of which are centric to the Central Valley, but where I'm based, but we are doing some in marketing research as well. Of course, the Happy Market Research podcast, which we're on right now. And then we have a consulting business that we're starting to help market research companies specifically on their social presence. And that's where I am.
Awesome. Well, thank you everybody so much for joining us today. We hope that you enjoyed this interview between Jamin and I, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks everybody. Have a great day.